Hey there, and welcome back to another happy hour edition of the Stripe Show podcast. I'm your host, Samantha Marks, as always. And this is brought to you by Encore Golf. Encore designs high-performance golf balls for players of all skill levels and swing speeds. If you've never tried out their golf balls, I encourage you to give it a try. If you don't know which one, get fitted for your perfect golf ball today at EncoreGolf.com. Well, we are back with another happy hour. I've got my Dr. Pepper Zero gearing up for the weekend. It's a season finale, Tour Championship Week. Do not forget, it's also Solheim Cup weekend. There's a lot been going on. We've got Patrick Reed in the hospital. We've got Phil's weird Twitter videos. I'll give you a snapshot of everything you need to know, quick and easy, before we get into our Korn Ferry Tour graduate interview here in a little bit with Andrew Novak, who is great. You guys are going to love him. He was very funny. And I'm not just saying that because he told me to. So this week we are at Eastlake. The Tour Championship is at Eastlake. The top 30 players in the FedEx Cup rankings are playing for that $15 million prize. I don't even know if I want to get into the staggered start discussion. I don't know if I have the patience for that discussion right now. But Patrick Cantlay started way ahead of the field after the first day. He's still ahead of the field, shortly followed by Jon Rahm. Jon Rahm was my personal pick to win. I think that he gets it done, and I think he, you know, takes that over in a couple weeks to the Ryder Cup and just continues to dominate. I love watching Jon Rahm. He's probably my favorite player on tour right now, and I love his firepower and what he can bring emotionally, and, you know, his ability to get really emotional with it to the Ryder Cup is something that I'm really looking forward to. Speaking of the Ryder Cup, if you haven't heard yet, Travis has already done a few specials for the Ryder Cup on the Stripe Show podcast, talking to an expert all about Team USA and an expert talking all about the European team. So if you haven't listened to those, I would encourage you to do so. Get ready for Whistling Straits with us. We're super excited for what's to come here in a couple weeks. But obviously, first, we have the Tour Championship. Bryson DeChambeau, it was getting heckled pretty bad, apparently, last week. And so PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan instituted a policy where anybody who calls Bryson Brooksy, which is obviously a play on his apparent rival, Brooks Koepka, is subjected to be kicked out of the event. Now, I'm curious how you guys feel about that, because part of me is like, okay, whatever. If that makes him feel better, fine. Part of me is like, this is ridiculous. Like, first of all, Bryson probably needs to get thicker skin. Second of all, everybody yelling at him like he's an animal at a zoo needs to grow up, in my opinion. These are professionals that we pay money to go and watch. So maybe let's let them do their jobs as best as they can. Personal opinion, it might not be a good take, but that's how I feel about it. Curious how you feel about it as well. And then Brooks kind of, you know, replied back and said that, you know, everything, it was just crazy, and golf needs to be better as a sport and everyone needs to be respectful. He kept saying that everyone can use more respect. So I understand it's hard because it is a sport where you kind of can hear everything on the golf course. But at the same time, you know, if you're going to be in that position, you have to learn how to tune those things out. Next up, we do have to talk about this. Patrick Reed was in the hospital with pneumonia, like double lung pneumonia, like really bad. I think it was last week. I think I talked about it, but apparently it was worse than we thought. He spent 5 or 6 days battling that pneumonia alone in the Houston hospital because of COVID. Nobody was allowed in the hospital with him, but Patrick Reed originally told somebody he tested positive for COVID. And then yesterday, now he says, oh, I was never actually tested positive, or I never was tested for COVID. And that just doesn't make sense to me. I don't know how you would be in the hospital for 5 or 6 days during a literal pandemic and not be tested for COVID. So I'm just saying that with the history of Patrick Reed's untruthfulness, that there's a lot of question marks up in the air about this story. He did have to drive to the Tour Championship because he could not be cleared to fly. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to play the Ryder Cup, if he's even chosen. Not sure if he's going to be chosen. Not sure how his health is going to hold up this week either. But Nevertheless, moving on. Phil Mickelson, his season is over. He's at home. He did not make it to the Tour Championship, but he's not done talking smack on Twitter. He called out the USGA for planning to roll back the length of the driver shafts, which the USGA tweeted about recently. They were going to roll the driver shafts back to 46 inches. Basically, Phil Mickelson believes that they should change the golf ball and not the clubs. So it's an interesting take here. He compared it to banning the sale of ice cream in New York City. So I don't know. And the USGA pretty much didn't want to comment back on it, saying like USGA.org/distanceinsights is where you can find all of our research. So not sure. Direct quote from Mickelson says, the guy who hits it 300 yards as opposed to the guy who hits it 200 yards. They might hit it more offline, but they hit it so short they're not going to get in as much trouble as the guy who hits it farther. It's just an idea to start addressing the real issue and not have other issues that are taking a lot of the fun away from the game and not addressing the problem. Get rid of the perimeter weighting so the ball isn't as stable and we have more weight in the center of the golf ball. Now, I don't know what that means. Bryson probably does. But yeah, Mickelson is all for the rollback for the golf ball, apparently, and that's where we're at on that. Now, lastly, what we're going to talk about is the Solheim Cup. The Solheim Cup starts tomorrow or today, this weekend, at Inverness, and there are some rookies that are excited to get going. We've got Leona McGuire, Yalimi No, and Matilda Castron. They're all excited to get to the first tee. And I always love watching first timers on a Solheim Cup or a Ryder Cup kind of get to feel that experience again. Jennifer Kupcho is playing for Team USA and she actually got engaged ahead of the Solheim Cup. So she's got a lot to celebrate. And yeah, the Cordas are going to be there. We've got Lexi. We've got Michelle Weeb pitching in there for some captaincy roles. So I'm super excited. We've also got the Korn Ferry Tour Finals, which we're going to talk about here in a second. But it's going to be a fun weekend of golf. We've got three really big events. So get your butt on the couch potato it all the way up, order some Uber Eats, grab a drink with me and enjoy the golf this weekend because there's some beautiful golf courses and a lot to watch. So as you know, we're getting to know the upcoming PGA Tour players, the Korn Ferry Tour guys who have secured their tour cards this season over the next several weeks of the year. This week, we're getting to know number 16, Andrew Novak. I love chatting with Andrew and getting to know him on and off the golf course. So here's a little bit more about him in his own words. I hope you enjoy. And I'll cut out all the beginning part. So like I'll cut all this out. Okay. I'll just start with 3, 2, 1. Andrew Novak, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Where are you calling in from? You got your nice hotel background.
Yeah. I'm calling in from Evansville, Indiana. It's a great hotel.
Where are you? We're in Indiana right now for an event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Tour Championship.
Yeah.
How's the course? Victoria Nationals, as usual, playing very tough. Very windy yesterday, so a lot of the guys struggled early. And today it was a little bit more scoreable, but guys are still having to deal with some mud balls out there. It's not playing all that easy. So.
And you're from Raleigh, right?
I was born there. I don't live there.
You were born there.
Everybody thinks I'm from Raleigh. I guess the tour does it weird. I don't know if there's like a way you look it up and it just says I'm from Raleigh because everybody always says that. And I haven't lived in Raleigh in almost like 16 years, 17, no longer, 20 years. Oh God.
Yeah, it does say you're from Raleigh on there.
So it probably says birthplace or something. I don't know. But no, I live in St. Simon's Island. I'm part of the Sea Island Mafia now. So from Charleston originally.
Okay, cool. And you've been playing as a professional since 2017. How's that been?
Good. I mean, it's, professional golf is typically not all smooth sailing. So it's been some up and downs, but overall it's been good.
And you obviously had a great season this year, graduated, got that PGA Tour card, headed to the big stage in a couple weeks. Describe that feeling of finally getting that card after 4 years of grinding on tour. Was it a bit of a sigh of a relief?
Yeah, I mean, this year was such a marathon. I won the fifth event of the season. We ended up having like 45-something events. It was a little ridiculous. So, I mean, when I won initially, I'd also had some decent finishes earlier. I was like set. I was like, I was going to have my PGA Tour card. And then they turned into a 2-year season, and all of a sudden I wasn't going to have my PGA Tour card. And then I played like crap at the back end of last season, basically. So I went from going to have a tour card in 6 months to being not in a good position. I mean, I was in a good position, but not in a good place. I mean, I was going to have to really fight for my spot again. So I don't know. I was very happy to get it done. But it was, I don't ever want to do a 2-year season like this again. That was a lot.
Yeah, I was, when I talked to a few other players who've been doing this series, getting to know everyone, they all kind of said the same thing. Like, usually if you win once, you're pretty set, you know, like you can just kind of coast till the end. So how were you able to stay in it? Because it had to have been exhausting, like mentally too.
It was such a grind. You had to keep playing well. We've got such a strong class this year too. It wasn't, you know, people weren't stumbling. Like everybody was playing so well. I mean, I had in 40 something events or whatever it was, I think I had a win in like 11 top 10s or something like that. And I finished 16th. Like that's ridiculous. I mean, I top 10 in over 20% of the tournaments and didn't even finish top 15. Like that's crazy. So like the level of golf being played by all the guys was truly incredible.
It's got to make you feel better though about earning that card, because it was a top 25 guys. So that's you were well into getting your card there at 16.
Right.
But yeah. You won the Suncoast Classic, right? That was your first win. You said it was a few events into the season. Birdied the final two holes. Tell us about those two holes.
Yeah, I still give Kevin Pryce crap for it. Probably best shot of my career, 17, my birdie putt. It was probably 60 feet. And I mean, I had to putt it like sideways. Like it fed it off a slope, made it crazy. Crowd went crazy. I don't think anybody's got it on video. He and the video staff left because I didn't hit it anywhere near the hole. And they went up to 18 to get somebody else hitting their shot. As far as I know, I've never seen a video of it, which is unfortunate. I mean, there were so many people there by the green. I was thinking maybe somebody got it. But as far as I know, nobody's got a video of that one. Now, they got a video of 18, and that was pretty special as well, getting the win. But 17, I'll never forget that one.
Dang, that sounds crazy. But you said it as well. You had 11, I think it was 11 on your profile, top 10s this season. Was it all kind of in a consistent stretch, or were they all spread out?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I basically didn't even play the last 4 months of last year. I mean, I played, but I played Thursday, Friday, and said, see ya. I missed, I don't know how many cuts, but I was playing awful. So I probably had two top 10s because I had a win and another top 10 in the first five events before COVID. And then basically 15 events, I just might as well have not showed up. So I think I had 8 or 9 top 10s since February this year. So yeah, I had a stretch basically this spring. I had 5 top 10s in a row, which I think tied a tour record. My game was in such a good place. I put so much work in the offseason. I mean, it was just, I was on autopilot, putting well, hitting it well, and just showing up each week and competing.
When you said you had a lot of missed cuts in a row at the end of last year, how were you able to pull out of that? Was it a swing thing? Was it a mental thing? Was it
completely, completely. My short game, like I probably like my short game last fall was unreal. Like I was like chipping in like at least once a round. I was getting up and down from every, now mind you, I was missing like 10 greens around probably. So I had plenty of opportunities to chip in. But I was getting up and down from like everywhere for like doubles. So I mean, I was hitting the ball so bad. Both ways, any club in the bag. It was really hard. It was really hard to play golf. I felt like I was hitting it really bad. I knew I was hitting it really bad, but I don't think I was completely, like, I wasn't way off to where I was like completely searching. I think Kevin Pryce told me I missed 8 cuts in a row or something like that, but I hadn't shot over par. for any of those eight tournaments or something like that. So, I mean, my putting and my short game was so good, and I just knew if I could get the ball striking where it needed to be, that I'd be right there. So I put the work in with my coach in the off season, got my swing back where it needed to be. You know, when we were playing and playing and playing, I just didn't have time to get comfortable, get anything going with it. But the off season came at a good time for me.
Yeah, well, as you know, Travis is an instructor on the Stripe Show podcast. We talk a little bit of instruction. What was off in your swing? Like, when your swing is off, what is it for you? And what do you have to kind of get back into the right feel of?
So in technical terms, like, what was I doing? So I've had the same swing coach my whole life, and I've always done kind of the same thing. And I've had a lot of certain swing flaws that I'll typically slide into, and those are easy fixes. But I'd gotten myself into some positions that I'd never really been in before, so I didn't really know how to get myself out of it. So I was getting incredibly upright, which for me is pretty rare. Like, I wasn't where Justin Thomas is, but kind of there. But I was getting very high with the club, which usually it sits a lot more behind me, and then I'm rotational. And I was way too vertical there. My weight shift was all off, out of sorts, so that was just making it even more timing. So I was basically chopping at it because I'm coming from way up high, dropping it down, cutting across, chopping at it, but then also like almost fading away to try and clear and get the club back in position. So I was hitting some wipe rights or some quick lefts with that. My right arm was doing something a little funky because it was getting so high. It wasn't in the position. I have a lot of lag in my swing. I think almost kind of like Sergio, where kind of drop it in a bit. I've got a lot of that going on. And so I was so far up, and my right arm could never get to where it needed to be. It was a few different things just causing multiple issues.
Are you more of a technical guy? Like, you want to see you just want to feel it?
No, I'm very much feel. As far as like getting the swing where I need to be, like I do the things I need to do to make sure my swing is dialed. But as far as a player, and even my swing coach for them, is like, I'm very much feel. And feel to the point, like, even if I'm doing technical swing stuff, I'm just trying to get a feel of like, almost like an exaggerated feel for what I need the club to do. And then, if I just do that a few times, it can just work its way in. And then when I swing, it just kind of works itself into the swing. But no, I'm not technical at all.
That makes sense. Well, I feel like there's so much technology out there now with the pressure plates and all the different things you can do with the golf swing. I played a long time ago, but that was too much for me. I was like, I don't need to know all that.
I understand why people do it and all that, but I don't know. It's a lot for me to be thinking about. I'm trying to get a consistent shot. If I can do the same thing every time and I swing and the ball does one thing, then I know I can just do that on the course.
It's that easy. Well, let's take a little bit of a turn. I know you're a big sports fan. I did read that PGA Tour profile.
Huge.
Let's talk some fun stuff. Who are your basketball and football teams? Obviously, football started up again a couple days ago. College, pro, whatever you want.
So college basketball, like, I got to rep my squad, Wofford. We're very good. We're competitive in basketball, so I can go ahead and root for it. Top-tier college basketball is hard for me. There's too much turnover. I don't know who the players are. I can't really keep up with the teams. My mom went to Duke, so I grew up rooting for Duke, but I haven't followed them in years. I mean, I can't keep up with all that, but absolutely. I watch every Wofford game, root for my guys. They'll get the tournament, though. They'll give some teams a scare. So, no, that's my squad there. NBA, I don't really have a team. It's more so just like players. Probably Steph's my favorite player to watch. So I'll watch the Warriors and I'll pull for him to do well. And then football, huge Canes fan. So Miami, that's my team. Since I was a kid, I don't know. I guess they were really good when I was young, but I don't know, they've been 20 years of disappointment for me now. So I'm hoping big game tomorrow. I don't know when this comes out, but big game on Saturday, playing Alabama. So I hope we don't get blown out. I mean, we'll probably lose. It's Alabama, but we'll see.
Could be a nice upset at the beginning of the season. That
would, oh my gosh. If I might take like a one over par tomorrow if it guarantees a Miami. It's like, I'm dead serious. Like,
I like it.
I'll take it. And then growing up in the Carolinas, I'm a Panthers fan for NFL. So not a whole lot to be too excited for this year, but we'll see.
Well, your mom went to Duke. I went to North Carolina for a couple years. So got some beef with your mom that I just found out about.
That's fine. I got my godfather went to UNC, and he was a manager on the basketball team, Michael Jordan's roommate. So I got a little bit of a UNC connection too.
Wow. What a story there. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing obviously a little bit of a series. Like I told you, we're getting to know all the 25 guys. We've got some rapid fire questions. Those you got to think about. These are rapid fire. Answer whatever comes to your mind as quick as possible. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Biggest thing you're excited about on the PGA Tour.
I know one of the other guys said courtesy cars. I think Curtis also said that. But honestly, for me, it's just going to be new courses. I get to see new, like, I've been playing the same course for like 4 years. So it'll be nice to see some new ones.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Best golf tip for the weekend golfer?
2-to-1 hole to beer ratio.
Love it. Top three players you're most excited to play with on the PGA Tour?
Tiger. He's coming back. You'll see. I want to play with Jordan. I want to see how crazy that short game is in person. And then third, I'd probably Bryson. I don't know. I want to see what 60 by me looks like.
Who or what motivates you?
Honestly, myself. I have other outside motivating factors, but like, if I'm gonna be honest, like, probably myself. I mean, I could be playing a round of golf with me and like a buddy, and even if we don't have anything on it, I'm gonna be hard on myself if I miss a putt or something. Like, I put pressure on myself because I work very hard at this game. I put a lot of time into it, and it's something I'm very serious about. So, you know, if I'm not doing what I need to be doing, I'm gonna make sure that I'm fixing it or trying to work on it and fix it.
I like that answer. Okay, three words to best describe you as a person.
Ooh, depends on who you ask. I'm gonna say funny. A lot of other people are gonna say funny, and then some people are just gonna say annoying. It's not like a word, but I'm smarter than people think. I did pretty well in school. So I'll go with smart. And then, I don't know. I'd say nice or fun, something like that. I like to think I'm a decent guy to play with on tour. I like hyping the guys I'm playing with up. You know, you make a good putt, I'll let you know about it. So
love that. Okay, three words to best describe your golf game.
Scrappy. Man, that might be all three. It could be a little hot and cold, maybe.
Scrappy, hot, cold. That's a good answer.
Well, no, I don't want cold to be one of the words. I mean, it's not always, you know. I would say scrappy is like by far going to be like the number one term that I'm going to go with. I feel like overall I'm pretty well-rounded golfer. My short game probably carries me a little bit, but I just like, I don't like making bogeys. I don't like giving up shots. Like, I'm a grind for whatever I got.
Love it. So okay.
That's all you need.
I love it. Any passions that are not golf related?
But we touched on the sports. It's going to be all based around that. I mean,
okay.
I love it. Like after golf, like football is like, golf is what I do, but like football is like my true love. It's like, seriously, I spend more time watching like football than golf. Like, it's not close. I understand football. I thought about like in the past, like I might be interested to like getting into coaching, like, you know, way down the road, like after golf, like just go retire somewhere, whatever. And then see if I can be like football coach and just do that. I love the strategy of it. I love, you know, I mean, it really is a chess match between coaches and that's just so interesting to me.
Well, it's interesting that you said that, because my next question was, if you weren't a golfer, what would you be doing? So that answered that question.
I honestly, that probably be it, because I got a degree in economics and that stuff is so boring. Oh my God. So I definitely not anything with that. So I probably would have gone back. I'd probably be some math teacher somewhere, hating that, and then just coaching football on Friday nights. I don't know. Maybe I could have got on a college team somewhere eventually down the road. If I started earlier on, you know, coaching's very much, you know, you coach with somebody for 10 years, they like what you do, and then put in a good word down the road somewhere, you might get an opportunity.
You never know. You never know.
But definitely coaching football, because I do not have the time or patience to coach golf. That is awful. I don't know how the coaches do it out there. But Travis, I have no idea how he does it. I've never met him, like I haven't seen him coach or anything, but that cannot be fun.
What are your top three favorite courses you've ever played?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so I've been asked this a few times lately, so I think I've got my three dialed down. I've played the old course at St. Andrews. That place is incredible. Love that place. Marion, I played there last fall. Awesome. My third is a little bit lesser known course, but I'm throwing it in there because people need to like know about this place. They need to go play there. Well, if they can, they need to go play there. I think it's ranked like kind of high, but it should be higher. That's Lancaster Country Club in Pennsylvania. It is so good. It is so good.
Okay. And then the best advice you were ever told, golf or not golf related?
I don't think I listened all that well as a kid. Man, it's not going to be anything crazy or special. Like, it's probably just going to be
like have fun. Like, or something.
Wait, is this as far as golf or like life? Anything? Man, it's going to be just something about like working hard. Like, if you work hard enough, like you can do it or something. But I don't know. You know, I don't have any specific thing I can think back on, but I mean that's like what I believe a lot. Like, if I got to get something done, then I just need to put the work in, and I can do it. So
love it. And then we touched a little bit on this earlier, but your most memorable golf shot to this day, was it that putt?
Well, I mean, as far as like what it meant to my career, I don't really see how it can't be that putt. I mean, obviously the putt on 18 is what locked up the win, but that one on 17 was, I mean, what got me there. But as far like my most famous shot, I was on SportsCenter top 10 in college at regionals, NCAA regionals. I made like literally 100-foot putt. Like, it was the longest putt I've ever even attempted in a golf tournament, and it went in the hole, and they got it on video. So I was like number 4 in SportsCenter top 10 the next day.
They got
So that was pretty cool, because I mean, that's on camera. I get on ESPN. I mean, that's pretty special. So,
yeah, that was a great answer. I love that. But yeah. Hey, clearly you're okay at distance putting.
Yes.
Lots of time.
We like having the short birdie putts, but sometimes those long ones work out too.
That's right. Well, Andrew, is there anything else you want our listeners to know about you heading into the PGA Tour season? Is there any other interesting facts we missed?
I mean, this is me. Hopefully, I don't know who I got to talk to, but hopefully that new little Netflix show they got comes calling. I feel like I'd be great on camera. I feel like they need, you know, some new blood, some Korn Ferry Tour guys coming up, for the show. I feel like I'll add some, you know, a different dynamic to some of the stuff they might have. So, you know, I don't know who I got to talk to for that, but PGA Tour, if you're listening, might be your guy.
I love it. I think you would be a great star on their show.
Thank you.
I'm excited to watch it. Netflix needs more golf, don't you think?
I think golf in general needs more personality. I mean, you know the top players for the most part, but you really don't know them all that well. You don't get to see too much into their life, which is, you know, some guys might not want that. But as far as the fan engagement, I think it's great. I think it's a lot of the reason why the tour started the PIP purse that they're paying out now. They want you know, the fans to know the players a little bit better.
Yeah, it was an interesting move. Lots of hot takes by some tour players recently about that as well, and their takes on it. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I still think Tiger is going to win some of it. What do you think?
I said he's coming back. 2022 something. If he's back, he's going to compete. I mean, he's not going to come back if he can't compete. That's not who he is. So if he's coming back, he thinks he's going to win. And there's too much data on that guy not to believe that he can't do it again. So we'll see. I hope so. We'll see.
I love it. Well, I loved your answers, and I love chatting with you, Andrew. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
We look forward to watching you this season. We'll keep an eye out for you, and good luck the rest of the week.
Of course. Thank you.
See ya.
See ya.
Let's take a second to talk about the folks over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation across the golf industry and with golfers everywhere for its combination of value, performance, and customer service. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is flipping the script on golf technology through perimeter-weighted balls made with the high-density particles and proprietary nanotransitional layer, offering players enhanced accuracy, control, and distance. Encore recently added the Vero X1 to its suite of award-winning golf balls, one that already included the Golf Digest gold-rated Elixir and low-compression Avant 55. Through its full suite of golf balls, Encore can help transform any golfer's game. Visit encoregolf.com/Travis Fulton for more info about Encore and start revolutionizing your game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.